Thank you for subscribing to InvestTalk. We'll begin in just a moment. KPP Financial Senior Vice President Justin Klein explains why a registered investment advisor firm wants to talk about real estate.
Your home is an important piece of your total financial picture. You need to make sure that when you do retire, you have a plan to maybe relocate, downsize if need be.
Contact Justin directly with a note on investtalk.com. Just select Contact Justin or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now, InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Tuesday, January 19th edition of InvestTalk. And of course, our mission is to help you find the answers and information you need and want to make the best possible money choices. Now, whether it's investing on your own, personal financial challenges, you're using an experienced money manager, it doesn't matter. You still need to learn and know what's happening. And we try to help you avoid make the mistakes of the average investor. So we're happy to say that we have listeners with all levels of experience, many of whom have been investing for years. And of course, I want those people to call us and give us your insights, give us your experiences, share your knowledge. And we have many more listeners that are just starting out. So both Justin and I encourage you to bring your curiosity to the table. What's going on? How does the market work? You know, what do these things mean that we're talking about? So we love beginner questions. Don't hesitate to call. Now, here's a thought. If you're a beginner or an experienced trader, it might help to gain some extra knowledge from others through investing in a club. Join an investment club. Investment clubs are pretty good. The primary reason for starting a club or becoming a member in a club is to make money. Of course, we all know that. But it's also a great way for investors to share ideas and learn about the markets. And plus, you know, it's a good social event. You meet people and talk to people who have the same interests as you, at least some of the same interests as you. Now, be cautious, okay? It may be a case of the blind leading the blind. So if you get in an all-inexperienced investors club, all of the members are not well-versed in how things work. So you don't necessarily want that. And you also might hear some glowing claims about clubs. Well, be very careful. Many clubs claim 50% or more are beating the market. Those kinds of things. But there's a little problem with that. You know, that little statistics. Only about 7% of the investment clubs, 7, report their results to a National Association of Investors Corporation. So there's only 7% that report their statistics and their trades and everything else to someone who's unbiased and then come up with an answer. And of those 7%, more than half don't beat the market. So remember, these are the only ones who would want to report the results to the NAIC. The only ones who want to do that is they want to be rated highly and know that they have good returns. So that means all the rest don't. So you're looking at the cream of the crop, and less than 50% of those beat the market. So don't think, it's that easy to just make money. Now, obviously, clubs with mediocre results won't be reported. We know that, right? An investment club is usually a legal partnership, a limited liability company consisting of 10 to 20 members. There's usually an initial joining fee of about $80. Well, sometimes it could be a lump sum. Sometimes it could be $300 or $50 or $1,000, depends. And there's usually, I think the average monthly contribution is like $80 per member. And it's important that your investment horizon is long-term, too. Because trying to make money in the short term just won't work. It just won't work, especially in a club. And make sure that the club that you join has the same kind of concept of what stocks to buy and sell as you do. You know, so you got to just remember that. So what are your questions today? It's time for you to call 888-99-CHART. Get in the conversation. 888-992-4278. I hope you feel that you're part of the discussion. So give me a call now.
Hi, how's it going? I got a question for you. I keep hearing a lot of financial podcasters talking about how an IRA, a traditional IRA versus Roth IRA, and they keep mentioning tax-free growth. They keep saying tax-free growth for Roth. I'm kind of confused by that because I was under the impression that the IRA, Roth IRA, and 401ks, the government-sponsored type accounts were, the point of them were that they had tax-free growth, and the difference was that you had to pay income tax on non-Roth versus Roth, not capital gains tax. So maybe I'm misunderstanding something. If that's the case, great, but if not, by all means, I'd like to try to understand what I'm missing and what people mean when they say tax-free growth in a Roth. Thanks.
Bye. Okay, very good question. Very good question. Tax-free growth, what they're referring to is in a Roth IRA, all the years that that money grows, you never have to pay taxes on it. In a regular IRA, all the money that grows over all that time, you never have to pay taxes on it until you take it out of a regular IRA. When you take it out of the IRA, regular IRA, it's now added to your adjusted gross income for that year you take it out, and you pay income tax. So the Roth is purely tax-free, even when you take it out, whereas a regular IRA is not tax-free when you start taking it out. Then you have to start paying income tax on it. Now, if you're in a very low tax bracket and you take out so little that you don't have to pay any income tax on it, then it's tax-free also. But that's not what they're referring to. They're referring to the tax-free benefit of a Roth all the way through its life, forever. Whereas a regular IRA, it's tax-free only up until you start taking it out in retirement. Then it's no longer tax-free. We're not talking about capital gains tax here. Not talking about capital gains at all. We're talking about it turns into, all those capital gains turns to income. Income in a regular IRA when you take it out. When you start taking out whatever you want to take out. You add it to your adjusted gross income. Seven ways mutual funds and ETFs will change investors in 2016. The ETF landscape is changing and changing fast. So how's it going to change in 2016? That's going to be one of our main talking points today. And how can share buybacks can be bad for you, the investor, and the corporation? They're not all good. Everybody can view share buybacks, views them as a good thing. And I won't say it's all bad. It's not. It is a good thing in many ways, but there's ways that it's not good. And I'm going to discuss those, if we may. And, you know, we had a million calls about GoPro, and I don't know how often I said I'm worried about GoPro because, you know, anybody can come up with a camera, a wearable camera. They didn't have any, what was their, what we call a moat? What was the difficulty of someone else doing the same thing they do? And here's an article talking about, you know, GoPro Inc. is the poster child for IPO market scams. GoPro. So I want to talk about what are the problems with GoPro and why, you know, something you should be very careful of. And also, finally, there's no long-term tie between GDP and stock markets. I mentioned this last, I think it was Friday, but I never got to it. And I would like to discuss that. Why there's no tie from GDP growth to the stock market. Now, that doesn't mean there hasn't been GDP growth and stock market goes up with the same, and you know, over the same period of time. Over long periods of time, of course, GDP growth and stock markets go up because that's the natural natural path, hopefully, of both those things. But and that has been the last 100 years. But they're not necessarily tied. And why is that? But I'll tell you this, this is a study that was done. Stock prices do have something that is a tie to their movement up and the other thing that's attached to them. But it's not GDP growth necessarily. Kind of interesting. A little bit obscure, but I think it's something that you might find interesting. Those are the talking points today. What happened to the market? Well, the market started off really strong, just like it did on Friday, and then fell, just like it did on Friday. And today, the market ended up being mixed. The Dow ended up being up 28 points, the NASDAQ down 11, and the S&P 1. We are experiencing tremendous tremendous volatility since the first. And again, it's been the worst start of the year for the stock market ever. I mean, it's ever. That's, you know, you can't say, well, the last 30 years, or no, it's ever. Worst start of the year for the stock market ever. And that's why, you know, I keep telling you, you know, what the good parts of the year, what the market tends to do. And I always say that it doesn't have to do that. It just tends to do that. And of course, one of the things this year I talked about, well, we tend to get a Christmas rally. We tend to get an end of the year rally. It's the best time of for the market is the end of the year and the beginning of the year. The last 3 months and the first 3 months. That's been the history. But it doesn't have to do that. And so far, we haven't seen the norm. It's not doing it. So just, you know, keep your powder dry. If you're wondering if your retirement portfolio could be more in tune with your goals or your life situation today, I may be able to help you. Each month, I set aside a few hours to talk with listeners. These are one-on-one meetings focusing on retirement accounts. I can help make some of those recommendation changes, help you with that, meaning if you need to manage some of your accounts. To reserve your time, just go to investtalk.com, click on schedule a meeting, that's investtalk.com, or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? There's many things we want to discuss like we do every day, but let's start off with those seven ways mutual funds and ETFs will challenge investors in 2016. The things that might happen. Number one, money funds. You know the mutual fund money, the mutual funds that offer money funds, you know, like if you sell a mutual fund XYZ and you don't want to reinvest the cash, where does it go? Or if you're in a brokerage account and you sell the stock and the money goes into a money market fund. Those are called money funds. Even if the Federal Reserve hikes 3 or 4 times this year, your rate of savings that money earns will probably not change. In other words, don't expect the money funds, the money market funds to pay more money this year. And why? It's because the companies have been eating a lot of expenses on here just to maintain that $1 per share level. And so they're not going to eat them as interest rates start to rise. They'll just not pass along. They'll start charging those fees again. That's what will happen. And over 100 alternative mutual funds or ETFs will probably go out of business this year. That's about one. These are alternative funds. That's about 1 out of 10. Maybe 1 out of 8. So be very careful about that. At least one alternative fund will implode. Now there's some will just go out of business simply because they'll have no interest. People won't invest in them. They're too exotic or not interested enough. But some might implode. In other words, remember, I'll give you an example. You know, the Third Avenue Focused Credit Alternative Fund, the ETF, that couldn't pay back. This is a high-risk, high-yielding bond fund, and they were having too many redemptions, and they stopped giving people their money back because they were affecting the prices of all of those illiquid assets they had. Well, there's going to be more of that happening in 2016. A liquid fund has a liquidity crunch, kind of related. They can't sell the underlying stock holdings, and they can't give your money back. That's going to happen probably this year. There's others too. You might want to read this article. There's a couple other things that could happen. Just be aware that there are risks in ETFs that maybe you're not aware of. This is Invest Talk, everybody. InvestTalk, InvestTalk. Appreciate you listening. What may be the number one investing mistake when we let our emotions drive our investing behavior? Not rational thinking. Don't let emotions drive you. Now, is that something you'd like to talk about? Our direct line, 888-99-CHART. Mark in San Ramon is holding, and we'll talk to him next on InvestTalk. Let's go to Mark in San Ramon. How you doing, Mark?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I'm in the FIRST system, and all along I've been regular GSP traditional, and a couple of years back they started offering Roth GSP, and I wonder which one is better for me, to do the Roth GSP or traditional TSP or do a mix 50-50.
Well, how old are you, Mark?
Oh, how old I am? I'm about 59.
Okay. Then, you know, at a certain age, a Roth, anything, Roth 401k, Roth IRA, a Roth TSP, doesn't look so attractive anymore because of its attractiveness is the length of time it has to earn tax-free going forward. So when you get about 50, go ahead.
But you know what? I'm planning to work at least another 15 or maybe more as long as, you know, I'm healthy.
Well, then it might be somewhat attractive if you got, you know, 15 years left, because it is, remember, every dime you put in it is taxed, okay? So you're going to have to pay income tax, and you're probably at a higher rate as you're older. So that
okay.
kind of,
all so, right, so,
go ahead.
So stay out of it completely, right?
Not necessarily. If you got 15 years, just don't go too crazy, because every dime you put in it means that's that money that you're not going to, that's taxed at a higher income tax rate now. When you're in retirement, you're usually at a much lower income tax rate when you pull it out. In a regular IRA, you pay taxes at a lower rate. So it's really hard to say, Mark, whether it's good or bad, but the more years you have a Roth, the better it is.
So if I was a 30-year-old guy just starting, you would have said go Roth TSP.
Correct. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much for the great program.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. And you probably will get varying opinions on that topic, but most money managers will say younger you are, the better the Roth looks. But there's pros and cons for each. Don't think it's all black and white. It's not. Okay, buybacks, share buybacks, buying the shares back. We've had, what was it? I think they said in 2015, it was $1 trillion in dividends and share buybacks. Okay, $1 trillion, that's huge. Dividends, as you know, since 2009, dividends and buybacks have been increasing in double-digit rates, and including last year. Share buybacks have clear appeal to companies as well, but longer term, buybacks could weaken a company's ability to weather an economic crisis because they spent the money that they had. They could have, you know, put that money aside and hold it for a rainy day. Now, there are pros and cons. Trust me, there's pros and cons, and everybody always focuses on the pros. So I'm going to try to talk a little bit more about the cons. Okay. Share buybacks reduce cash reserves. That those reserves are that could be used for expanding the company and by building a new factory, upgrading systems. So all that money is not there when you do share buybacks. Okay, so then that, of course, could affect the credit ratings. Even if they wanted to start to borrow money because they didn't have the cash, you know, this could be a detriment to their borrowing ability. Okay. Current levels of share buybacks are approaching the highs seen last time just before the crash in 2008. I don't know if that really means that we're going to have a crash. I don't think it will, but it is high. It's very high. Now, there are really good business reasons to do share buybacks. One of them is that, you know, you could borrow money at 2%. This is Apple did this. Borrow money at 2%, buy back your shares on a company that yields a lot more than that, 5-6%. Okay, so the company actually makes more money than it costs to borrow the money. So in that scenario, it looks attractive. Now, that's fine for a company that has lots and lots of cash. It doesn't hurt its position as far as, you know, having funds for operation. So there are good things about it. But the big problem is there's a lot of companies borrowing money to buy back shares that they probably shouldn't, only to goose the price of the stock. So the corporate bigwigs who get shares in the form of compensation, and so they can turn that compensation in shares into income for them at the highest possible price. So the buybacks might be an artificial thing that obviously can't be sustained. So you really got to be careful on those buybacks. For what company is it doing it? Is it to the benefit of long-term for the shareholder or just a short-term for benefit for the CEO, CFO, and all the other high net worth insider people that are trying to cash in their shares that were given to them? Dick is on the line of Boston. Hope it's not too cold in Boston. My best friends live in Boston. We'll ask him to hold on. Coming up next in the half hour, everybody loves a bargain, especially if it makes us feel better about spending money, especially eating out. 888-99-CHART. Give us a call.
Coming up on the next InvestTalk, index funds can be short-term strategic and long-term smart. The best time to invest in index funds, that's one of our talking points on the next InvestTalk. But of course, your questions always come first. You can join us by phone or contact Steve on investtalk.com and ask your question. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. InvestTalk is made possible each day by KPP Financial. This is InvestTalk for Tuesday, January 19th. And remember, Steve meets with a limited number of InvestTalk listeners each month, and he meets on Skype or by phone or in person at our Northern or Southern California offices. To schedule your time, click on Schedule a Meeting on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to David in Boston. How you doing, David?
Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
I'm looking at diversifying my dividend portfolio with some foreign stocks.
Okay.
So I'm looking at LYB out of the Netherlands. But the real question is about how it's taxed.
LYB. Okay. This is Lionel Basel. Netherlands-based manufacturer of polypropylene compounds, polyurethane, those kinds of things, propylene.
Yeah.
And it pays a 4.2% dividend in the Netherlands. It's paying that dividend in the form of an ADR here in the United States, okay? So it's going to pay you a dividend of 4.2% in U.S. dollars, and it'll be treated just like any local company in U.S. dollars. Local meaning a U.S.-based company.
So they won't take a 15% tax off the top? I'll just pay that.
I've never seen them do it. The only time I see them doing it is if it's a limited partnership, some of those oil pipeline companies. If it's a pure straight dividend, I don't think you have any issues like that. But
okay.
I'm not an expert in that area, by the way, but I think that's true.
Right. Well, the stock looks undervalued to me. Any quick thoughts on that?
It's definitely undervalued. Okay, they're going to make $10.04 next year, $10.33 this year a share, and it's a $73 stock. I mean, you can't get much cheaper than that. It has been as low as 4 PE in the last 5 years and high as 14. So it's not, you know, might not be as cheap as you think it might be based on its own history. But really what you need to think about is, you know, it's related to, you know, it's Europe, of course. How much business is outside the Netherlands? How much is in the U.S.? Those kinds of things. And how does oil prices impact it? And I would think that low oil prices help it, not hurt it.
Right.
Okay, because they make their products out of those compounds, out of oil. So I kind of like it as far as a value play, and it's right near very strong support. And it would be I can't see it. It can go down. We all know that. If we're going into recession or Europe goes into recession, it obviously can go down lower. But if we don't, it should hold right in this area. It should hold. So
okay, thank you.
I kind of like it. Appreciate the call. LyondellBasell, it is a $33 billion company. So it's a worldwide company and pretty strong numbers. Pretty strong numbers paying 4.2% dividend. It's time for Vestock Personal, the day-to-day money choices we make that can have lasting impact. We all know dining out is a luxury, going out to dinner. We know that. And I'm not even talking about a fancy dinner. Just a dinner for two averages about $40 to $50. So if you have a young family, you got more than two, it can get pretty expensive real fast. And if you like to have a bottle of wine, forget about $40, $50. It's going to be a lot more than that. So we know it is a luxury. We know it's expensive. However, there's a way that you can, using social media and mobile technologies, a way that you can get pretty nice fancy dinner, pretty nice dinner out with huge discounts, or because what's happening is the restaurants are smartening up. They know they can't attract people through Yellow Pages and those kinds of things. So when you're a restaurant, you kind of attract people to your restaurant. They got to try it. So there is an application, there's a website, www.restaurant.com. It's a site for restaurants, but you can search by zip codes. And they give you, many restaurants give you huge discounts or gift certificates. For example, you may see a restaurant that offers $25 gift certificate for $10, or a $10 gift certificate for $4. You can get great gift certificates and get really inexpensive. You can really cut your meal down. If that's a restaurant you want to go to, and you want to try it, this is one thing you can do. And this is not, I'm not trying to advertise www.restaurant.com. I'm just thinking as an idea, if you want to go out, you got to go out to dinner, you want to go out someplace nice, but you don't have a lot of money, you don't want to spend a lot, you want to get a discount, go there. It's pretty good. That's Invest.Personal, Personal, everybody. If you'd like to share a money-saving idea, click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. Now let's go back to the phones. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
How about some inside information? There's a whole collection of webinars like How the Pros Do It. Steve and Justin give you an inside look at the strategies and tools the professionals use to grow and protect money. Just become an InvestTalk Insider and gain access to these webinars. Join up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Carl from Massachusetts, and I'm calling to get your thoughts on AER, AerCap Holdings. It seems to be taking a beating lately, and I just can't figure out why, so I just wanted to see if there was something I might be missing. Thanks.
AerCap Holdings. I'm quickly trying to look at the news to find out why it's getting beat up so much, and it looks like it's really oversold. AerCap Holdings to release fourth quarter earnings. They won't release those till February 23rd, so that, yeah, we don't know. It leases aircraft engines and parts to commercial airlines and cargo operators, and AER is the symbol. It made $4.79 in 2014. That almost doubled the year before. 2015 is going to make $6.25. That's another 30% increase. Next year, though, it's only going to make $6.02. It is a $32 stock. Now, that is a really low price. The 5-year PE range is 4 to 16. 4 to 16, and it's at 5 right now. It's really oversold. The value is there. The growth rate is what is a little problem. The sales growth rate is slowing. The earnings growth rate is slowing. But it certainly has got very strong value. Where it is, it's worth a lot more than it's trading at $32. And I mean, it was $1.16 today. It's worth a lot more than $32. More like almost double that, $65. Now, are you going to see it anytime soon? Well, I don't know. The one issue that you have to be aware of in this company that might be the problem is they have a lot of debt. They're carrying a lot of debt. And that debt might be what's really scaring. So you got to look into that part of the balance sheet. Why is there so much debt? Okay, and if there, and they even offered recently, you know, notes, bonds. Yeah, there's something's not right, and I think it might lie in the debt. That's something I can't tell you quickly right now. How much of a problem it is. So check out the debt. How much they have to pay? How much is short-term debt that has to be refinanced? Because if you can think about that, if the interest rates if they are going to rise, financing debt. Any company that has debt, it's going to have harder time in the future than it is now of refinancing that debt. So the less debt they have, the better the balance sheet will be, the stronger the company will be. And maybe investors are really worried about that debt because it's fallen from $40 down to $32 in 2 weeks since the beginning of the year. And I know the market's been weak, but this has fallen harder than the market justifies. And that's AER, AeroCap Holdings. That company's out of the Netherlands again, though. That's interesting. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk about GoPro. You know, I have not been a big GoPro proponent for years, even when it really got high and everybody was really high on it. They probably thought I was stupid. Yeah, because I'm saying, no, I don't know. They don't have a product that's unique. It seems like people can easily copy it. And I'm just not comfortable recommending it. I'm just not. Now, so if you look at GoPro, what was the height? I thought it was $90-something. Let's see, this is GOPR, is that GoPro? Yeah, GPRO, GPRO. And I'm not talking about GoPro just to beat them up. I'm talking about it as a lesson, as an IPO lesson, initial public offering. They came out at $24. Shot up to the 95, mid-90s. And that was in December 2014, in the mid-90s. It came out in, I think, June 26, 2014. In 6 months, it was really high. After 6 months, remember I tell you that after about 6 months, the insiders are allowed to sell their shares? And so what happened in GoPro case is insiders started to sell their shares like crazy. Take their profits. And the company's stock started to fall. And is now, what, today is at $10.57 from 90-something? Why did it fall so much? Why is it so weak? Well, one of the reasons is they've just cut their workforce. Their sales are still fairly strong. Earnings are falling. Sales are getting weaker. It's still pretty good growth, but this is the problem. What new device have they come out with? What innovative device did they come out with? Why did they not issue more shares at $96 and buy some more companies? Why don't they come out with a new device every year like Apple does that has some great new technology about it? Something new and different. So their execution has been poor. Execution. What is the new thing? What's so new about GoPro? Maybe they should have diversified into other products that are related, to their business. And therefore, diversify their income stream instead of being just. See, there's different things they could have done. They didn't do. Also, IPOs. Remember, the IPOs go to the popular IPOs go to the most pop. It goes to the bigger guys, not you and me, the individual. We had to buy it aftermarket. So what happens is hedge funds and large other types of funds, I won't name names because I can't, they will drive up the prices by making it even more popular, buying the stock more. Maybe they have unlimited funds. Therefore, driving up the price, and they can sell into the enthusiasm of you, the individual investor. And I believe that's what happened with GoPro. Everybody was talking about it. Everybody's so happy about it. And I'm saying, wait a minute. How can it be so expensive? The most they made was $1.33 in 2014. This year, they're going to make 70 cents a share. $1.33 is the most they made, not 14. $1.33 in 2014. What's that worth? Well, $20, $30, $40? Is it worth $96 a share? No, it never was. Now it's 88 cents. They're going to make 88 cents a share this year. And it's selling for $10.57. You could say that, well, that's fairly priced. That's not too bad. And that is correct. That they're going to make but they're going to make 70 cents a share next year. It's going down. So you want to pay less for something that's earning less, even though sales are still growing. So I can tell you now, looks like a reasonable price for the stock. But you don't want to catch a falling knife, as I say. You don't want to try to catch it as it's still falling. So you kind of have to wait to see this, the GPRO. I'm still typing in things here. You kind of want to wait to see where it's going to fall, because there's no support. It's fallen. It's at 52. It's at the high since it started trading, a low, and it's still falling. So I'm not keen on picking it up yet, or even thinking about picking it up. I need to see it turn around earnings, and I need to see it turn around the shrinkage of sales. So they got to go back up. So be very careful. We're going to go to James in New York. How you doing, James?
Good. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for the call.
I wanted to ask about Kate Spade & Co., retail stock. I bought it, I'd say, maybe 8 or 9 weeks ago while it was up to about 20 and a half, give or take. It's fallen quite a bit. I've lost probably close to $5 a share, but I know that's the case with many stocks lately, so I'm not too worried about it. My question is, should I be worried about it? Should I, expect it to maybe rise up to the high 20s again, or 30, or whatever the case may be?
Okay, let's look at the fundamentals. It's called Kate Spade & Company. It's out of New York. Markets apparel, accessories, fragrances under Liz Claiborne, Kate Spade, Jack Spade, and other brand names. It is a $2 billion company. They sell about $277 to $280 million a quarter. Okay, they didn't make money until 2014. 2014, they finally made money at 25 cents a share. 2015, and we still don't know for sure, but it's estimated to be 49 cents a share. And 2016, it's estimated to make 83 cents a share. And sales are still growing 10, 11% per quarter. So those are all good things, okay? So why is the stock falling so far? Well, what's 83 cents a share worth? Let's say it's worth the market 15 PE. That's a $13, $14 stock. That's a market PE. What's it selling at? $15.70. Well, then it's right now fairly priced. And it's been falling. So it's now fairly priced as opposed to it was before. So there's where your problem. And they do have quite a bit of debt that makes everybody a little bit nervous. But I think it's a proper price now. So it should pretty soon flatten out. I think it will flatten out, maybe turn around. Will it go back up? If they can boost sales again, yeah, they can. If they can't, then it's going to be a problem. 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk. We were just talking about Kate Spade and another company, and both those companies had lots of debt. I just want to tell our listeners here that I think 2016, debt is not going to be a good thing to have on your books, carrying a lot of debt. I think companies that have a lot of debt are going to struggle a lot more than those companies that don't. And why? Because interest rates are, the Fed has said they're going to raise rates. Whether they do or not, there's the perception that they are. I don't think they're going to raise rates very much. I really don't think they can afford it. But, they still want to raise the rates. And carrying debt is going to start costing more and more money. So that means investors don't like it. It means the stock prices are going to suffer. And anyways, also, there's been a study that says there's no long-term tie to GDP, gross domestic product, growth, and stock markets going up. Now, isn't that interesting? There's no GDP growth tie to stock prices. What is tied to stock prices is earnings per share growth. Earnings per share growth always means eventually stock price is going up. Not a perfect tie. Doesn't happen at the exact same time. Now, how is that possible? Because you know since what? 1929, since a great crash, the GDP has grown, and so has the capitalization of the stock market. It's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger over all those years. We know that. However, the capitalization or the size of the stock market doesn't necessarily translate into higher and higher stock prices. And now stock price is driven by earnings per share because they could issue more shares, which would drive down earnings per share. How much money per share do they make? Well, if they issue more and more shares, that drops the earnings per share number. If they take away earnings per share, that increases the earnings per share numbers. So it's been the stock market moving up in price has been tied to earnings per share, but not gross domestic product. Okay? Now, there is a relationship. I don't want you to think there's no tie. Yeah, there is. But it's a lot more closely associated with earnings per share. Now, let's get one more question before the end of the hour. Our time is, our number is 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. So let's go there.
Hey, my name's Tom. I'm a podcast listener from New York. I was looking at Skyworks Solutions, symbol SWKS, for a medium to long-term position. Wanted to know your thoughts on the company and if it's a good time to buy. Thanks, and I love the show.
I've been watching Skyworks myself. It manufactures analog, mixed signal, amplifiers, all detectors, and diodes, and all those things, really for the cell phone industry. It's announced late last year a repurchase of $400 million worth of stock. It's an $11 billion company. They're growing sales. Last quarter was 23% growth. Sell before that quarter before that was 38%. Quarter before that was 58%. So sales growth has been going down slowly, earnings per share. Earnings are going to go up 15% this year. This is earnings per share. And then another 15% next year to $6.99. And it's a $60 stock. So the P is going to be a little bit below 10 if the earnings per share number comes in. And the stock stays priced at the same as it is today. So that would tend to mean that the stock is undervalued. I think it's undervalued. They have no debt. They pay a small dividend, 1.7%. Management owns 1%. Mutual funds have been buyers. I think it's a good, solid company and one you want to own. I'd like to own it. I'm just going to wait till it starts being weak and maybe start moving up in price. And of course, it's been weak all this year so far because the whole market has. I think it's a stock that you want to put in your portfolio. You just want to see it stop going down and maybe start to move up a little bit to give you a better chance to pick it up at a price that it won't go down any further. SWKS, Skyworks Solutions. Pretty big company, big cap company. Looks pretty good. Our time is up, but if you have a question you want to ask and you didn't get around to it today, you know we have our 24-hour listener line. You just call it, 888-99-CHART. Just leave the question on the answer machine. We will get to it on the next Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. And let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.